Well, last time we reached that turning point where Israel has demanded a king. In so doing, they've offended both Samuel and God, which is not bad going. Both feel the sense of rejection, and with good reason, because they had a perfectly good working system. Cost-friendly system of governance. Samuel was their leader in war and in peace, and their king was God. But in keeping with the constitution of the nation of Israel, which cannot be gainsaid, they are granted their king. And of course, it's God is going to do the choosing. He will select. Samuel doesn't select anything. It's up to God to point out to Samuel who that man will be, and he does. He does. And he takes a king from the tribe of Benjamin, which, as we said last time, is disturbing, because in reality it should have been from the tribe of Judah. Kingship was promised to Judah, and yet God takes a Benjamite, not the most popular of tribes. And small. Why? Small, and as we saw in their past, potentially very horrible. Why? Because then he will have no lasting covenant of kingship with his chosen king. There will be no promise of a dynastic setup. Or, as I put it last time, Saul is an expendable monarch and will be disposed of. But it is at this point that we see his anointing. So, left hand side of the page, bottom there, you can see Vayikach Shmuel et Pach HaShemen, and Samuel takes the phial of oil, Vayitzok al Rosho, and he pours it upon his head, Vayishakehu, and he kisses him, Vayomer, and he says, Halo ki mashachacha Adonai anachlato lenagid. Behold, the Lord has appointed you, has anointed you over his people, over his legacy, to be the Nagid. Doesn't use the word king. Mm-hmm. Remember, we said this last time. God is the king. The only word he allows himself to use is the expression prince, ruler, the man who goes in front. And please notice, who is bearing witness to this?
Oh.
Who's around to see what's going on? No one. No one. This is being done very much in private, for reasons we shall see. And then Samuel does something equally strange. Now, he's supposed to be the prophet of Israel, acknowledged from Dan in the north to Beersheba in the south, as the authoritative spokesman for God. And yet he feels necessary to convince Saul of his position by offering him signs. Belechtecha hayom imadi, he says to him, when you leave me today, umatzata shnei anashim, you'll then meet two men in Kvurat Rachel, at the tomb of Rachel, Bigvul Binyamin, in the border of Benjamin, Betzeltach at Tzeltach. And that's a problem, because the tomb of Rachel is not in the borders of Benjamin, it's in the territory of Judah. And so traditionally we translate this verse, you will meet two men who are currently at the tomb of Rachel, but by the time you meet them, you're going to meet up in Tzeltach in Benjamin. Okay, that's a means of escape. V'amru alech, and they'll tell you, Nimsiut ha'tonot asher halachta levakesh, the asses whom you originally went out to seek, they've been found. V'hine natash avicha et divrei ha'tonot, your daddy has forgotten about the issue of the asses, v'da'ag lachem lemo, he's worried about you, saying, ma eseh livni, what can I do for my son? What's happened to him? V'chalavta misham, and you will move on from there, Vahala. Uvata ad Eilon Tavor, you come to the terebinth of Tavor, umatzaucha sham shlosha anashim, and three men will meet you there, olimel ha'eluhim Betel, going up on pilgrimage to God at Betel, the other famous shrine, established by Jacob. Echad nosei shlosha gadayim, one carrying three kids for sacrifice. Ve'echad nosei shloshet kikarot lechem, and one of them carrying three loaves of bread, also as an offering. Ve'echad nosei nevel yain, and one was carrying a skin of wine for a libation. What detail he's giving them there. Ve'sha'alu lecha l'shalom, they'll greet you in peace. Ve'natnu lecha shtei lechem, and they'll give you two of the loaves. Ve'lakachta me'adam, and you shall take it from them. Why is he telling you must take it? Because these are intended for sacrifice. These are sacred loaves. But they'll be given to you, Saul, and you will take them because you are now anointed as a sacred person.
Why two and not the three?
Why not the three? One left over for God. Ach again, and thereafter, Tavo Givat Elohim, you shall come to Givat Elohim, the hill of God, Gibeah of God, or the hill of God, which we take to be Saul's hometown of Gibeah. Asher Sham Netzibei Pelishtim, where the Philistine governors are located. Now, at long last, we're given a piece of information. We know the Philistines are dominating the land, but where was their seat of governance? In Saul's own native city. And that is the challenge to Saul, because they represent the force he must eliminate. Vihi, and it will happen, Kavoach Hashem, when you arrive there, Ha'ir, at the city, Ufagata Chevel Nevi'im, you'll meet a group of prophets, Yordim Me'abama, coming down from the high place where they've been sacrificing. V'lifnehem, and before them will go Nevel, the harp, the tof, and the timbrel, the chalil, and the pipe, the kinor, and the psalter. V'heim mitnabeim, and they'll be, translated normally, prophesying. Now what else is going on here? First of all, what's this idea of a chevel nevi'im, a band of prophets? I know about a prophet. I know about Isaiah, Jeremiah, and I know about the Elisha and Elijah. I didn't know they had a football team as well. What you must appreciate is that originally these great prophets did have their disciples. They were masters who were training other prophets, or trainee prophets, educating them in the law and tradition of the nation of Israel. And they were known as the B'nai Hanavi'im, the sons of the prophets, the prophetic guild, who would live together to study under their master, who would be trained spiritually in the hope that at some point God may select one of them to carry out one of his sacred tasks. So we've got a group of such people who are coming down from the sacrifice, and they're being inspired by the music. It's coincidental that I've got the music there, because music inspires prophecy. We see this much later on when Elijah needs the Spirit of the Lord to come upon him. He calls for someone, a musician, to play for him. But what does Nabi'im mean? Prophesying. So what, they were making great statements of state? If so, it must have sounded like a real gaggle. Our oldest translation to the Bible, the Targum. Have you heard of the Targum? Are you familiar with Targum? Mm-hmm. The Aramaic translations to the Torah, to the Nevi'im, Ketuvim, and of course to the prophets, it's the Targum Yonatan, translates this as praising. They weren't making prophetic statements. They were praising God.
Like singing psalms?
Not a very happy translation, because it doesn't mean that.
But it wasn't allowed to prophesize.
Well, this is the point now. That happened with the story of Moses, where the spirit of prophecy breaks out among the people, yeah. And Moses says, leave them alone. If the spirit of God has touched them, leave them alone. And here too, what we're looking at are people in a prophetic ecstasy. In plain language, they've been turned on. And they are singing, rising, uttering, who knows? The nearest thing we can imagine them to be, of course, would be the dervish. The dervish. Who would be throwing himself about, and we're going to see this subsequently, having been taken over by the Spirit of God. And I think this makes very good sense. That you will meet a group of people who have been inflamed by the divine presence and will be reacting accordingly. Moreover, he says, watch out, Saul, it's catching. For tzalcha alecha ruach Adonai, and the Spirit of the Lord will flash through you, v'hitna bita imam, and you'll go into the prophetic ecstasis with them. V'nepachta li'ish acher, and you will be transformed into another man. Mm-hmm. You have to be transformed. You're no longer Saul, son of Kish, the Benjamite. You're going to be the anointed king of Israel. Vaya, and it shall be, ki tavona tota elelach, when these signs will come to pass for you, asei lecha shetim sayadecha, do that which your hand finds. Because God is with you. It's very strange. First of all, he's prophesying a whole series of events. Sort of blowing his nose. And we ask, why is he doing that anyway? Simple answer. Saul has been told he's king. You may find that extremely difficult to believe. Therefore, he needs convincing. And the prophet is giving him a series of signs which will show, yes, you are the man. But whereas Samuel will predict Saul's experiences, the one thing he won't predict is what he'll do next. Because once Saul is king, it is up to him to take charge of his own life, to carry out his own actions, because he now acts under the aegis of God. And he continues. V'yaratalfanai. And I want you to go down before me, ha-Gilgal, to Gilgal. V'hine anochi yored elecha, and I will come down to you there, la'alot olot, to offer up burnt offerings, lizbav zivchei shlamim, to sacrifice peace offerings, shivat yamim tochel, you must wait 7 days, adbo elecha, till I come to you. V'odati lecha et asher ta'aseh, and then will I tell you what to do. That's an enigmatic phrase. What does that mean? I'll tell you what to do. I won't answer it now. Maybe it will become clear. But where's Gilgal? And what was Gilgal? Gilgal is a bit difficult to identify, but it's believed to be a Benjamite shrine located in the vicinity of Jericho. And what was so special about Gilgal? At the time of the conquest of the land, as they entered the land, Gilgal was the point where Joshua circumcised all those people that had not been circumcised in the wilderness, a whole generation of them. Mm-hmm. So it was the point at which the nation of Israel renewed their covenant with God. And that's the place where your kingship will be proclaimed. And he continues. Vahaya. Kafnoto shichmol alechet meim Shmuel. And it was as he turned his shoulder to go away from Samuel. Vayahafoch lo Elohim levacher. God invested him with another heart. The transformation was already beginning with this man. And all those signs which Samuel predicted came to pass in that one day. Any doubts Saul had have now been dissipated. He knows who he is.
Was it called Gilgal before the circumcisions?
No.
No, I thought not.
No. There is a place called Galaad, where Jacob and his delightful father-in-law came to a pact not to knife each other when they weren't looking. But that's a different place. Well, that's exactly what it means. When it says Mitzpah, it means God watch out for you because I don't trust you. Vayi. I'm sorry. Vayavo sham agivata. And so they came to Gibeah. Vine chevel levim likato. And sure enough, a troop of prophets come out to meet him. Vatitzlach alav ruach Elohim, and the Spirit of the Lord flashes through him. Vayitnam bei betocham, and he prophesies in their midst. Vayihi kol yodo'o meyek moshil shom, and all those people who had known him in the past, vayiru, and they looked, and they saw, v'hineim divim niba, that he was prophesying among the other prophets.
This is Saul prophesying.
Yes. Saul has been taken over by the Spirit of God, just as Samuel said, but he's on home territory now. Consequently, he's surrounded by people who knew him in the past.
So they're behaving differently.
And they see Saul is now ecstatic with prophecy. When they said to one another, Maze hayalavin kish. What's happened to the son of Kish? And this is not polite, this is rather dismissive. At best, they're saying, you know, we knew this kid when he was in short trousers and we know what he got up to. All of a sudden he's prophesying? Alternatively, they're saying, the son of Kish? Remember what Saul said when Samuel first told him, you are the man? He says, what, me? I'm the least significant member of the least significant family of the least significant tribe, the horrible tribe of Benjamin. And it seems that this may have been the case. What, him?
Ridiculous.
Hagam Shaul Banavim. Is Saul now also among the prophets?
Hagam is also,
and the ha at the beginning indicates a question.
Right, thank you.
In grammar it's known as the hey interrogative. Mm-hmm. It shows this is a question.
Thank you.
Vayan ish misham. And one of the men standing there responded, Vayomer, and said, Umi avihem. You're being disparaging about Saul and about his ancestry, and how can a man from such a family be prophesying? Well, look at this lot. Who's their fathers? You mean this troop of prophets you're looking at all come from distinguished parentage? Since when was aristocracy a requirement for prophecy? Al Cain. Therefore, Hayetala Mashal. It became a parable among the nation of Israel that when somebody achieved something you wouldn't have expected of them, they would say, Hagam Shaul Banavim. Is Saul also among the prophets? Poor old Saul.
Is it used nowadays?
In modern Hebrew, I hear people using it. Uh-huh. In fact, I've used it myself, yeah. and with good cause. Vayichal Mehit Nabot, and he eventually ceased from his prophecy. Vayavo Abama, and he came up to the high place. Vayomer Dod Shaul Elav, and Saul's uncle said, remember, he's in his family circle now. V'el Naron to his young man, Anhalachim, where do you get to? Vayomer, he said, Levakesh et Atonot. I went to look for the asses, you know that. Vanirechi Ayin, and we saw we couldn't find them, so Vanavo El Shua, we came to Samuel. Vayomedol Shaul, and Saul's uncle asks, Hagidan Ali, tell me now, Ma Malachim Shmuel, what does Samuel say to you? Why does he ask that question?
Because
does he suspect something? Yes, there's something overcome this man. Little Saul, who may have been a lobos, if you want to know what that term means, has now come back, transformed into a figure inspired by God. So what do the prophets say to you? And look how he answers. Vayomer Shaul el Dodo. And Saul says to his uncle, Hageit higidlanu, indeed he told us, ki nimsu atonot, that the asses have been found. V'et davar melucha lo higidlo. But he didn't say anything about the issue of kingship, asher amar Shmuel, of which Samuel had told him. He's keeping that to himself. And we may ask, why? Is it because he doesn't believe it yet? Or is it because this issue must be kept private? After all, Samuel anointed him in private. Mm-hmm. It has to be kept private until there will be a public revelation. But please note something else. For the first time, the author of the book of Kings, of Samuel, has allowed himself to use the word kingship.
Kingship.
You have to know he hasn't. But now he has. Reality. Now comes the big event. I'm going to call it the Royal Lottery. And you'll see why. Vayatzik Shmuel et Am el Adonai. Samuel summoned the people to the Lord. Hamitzvah. The Mitzvah. The Jacobite shrine. Vayomer b'nei Yisrael, he said to the children of Israel, Ko amar Adonai Elohei Yisrael, thus says the Lord God of Israel. I want to remind you of some facts. Now you've demanded a king to replace my rule. Anochi he'eleiti et Yisrael mi Mitzrayim. That anochi is emphasis. You know, in English, I can emphasize with tone of voice. Take a phrase like, I will go. I will go, you lot can stay behind. I will go, you can't do anything about it. I will go. I will go, even if it takes my last breath. And all I need is modulation of the voice. Hala Eilech means, I will go. So how am I going, to emphasize? I have to say, Ani Eilech. I'm giving emphasis. Here too. Heleti by itself means, I brought up. But Anochi Heleti. Remember, it was I who did this. Who brought Israel out of Egypt? V'atzilechem miyad Mitzrim, and I saved you from the Egyptians. U'miyad kol ha'mamlachot ha'lochatzim etchem, and from the hand of all those nations that were oppressing you. Remember it. You have short-term memories. V'atem hayom me'astem, and as for you lot, again emphasis, you this day you have rejected Elohim, your God. Ashehu moshia lachem, who saved you, mikoraotechem, from all your evil experiences, vatzarotechem, and your trouble. Vatomru lo, and you said to him, ki melech tasim aleinu, you shall appoint a king over us. This was an insult. But God has to abide by his own constitution. Samuel won't let that go. Ve'ata, so now, hityatzu lifnei Adonai, stand before the Lord, take up your positions, l'shivteichem, according to your tribes, u'li'alfeichem, and your thousands. Now the lottery begins. Vayakrev et shevet Binyamin. And as a result of the first lottery, he brings near the tribe of Benjamin. L'mishpachotav, according to its families, its clans, v'tilachei mishpachat ha'matri. And the Matri family was selected. Vayilached Shaul ben Kish. And among the family of Matri, Shaul ben Kish was selected. But unfortunately, Vayivakshuhu, they looked for him, blown inside, couldn't be found. Vayishalu od Badunai, so they inquired again of the Lord, Havaud Halomish, is the man come here? Vayom Adonai, the Lord said, Hinehu nechba elakelim, he's hiding among the baggage. Vayarutsu, so they ran, Vayikahuhu misham, and they took him from there, Vayikatse patocha am, and he stood there among the people, Vayikba mikola am mishikmo mamala, and he stood head and shoulders above everybody else. What's going on here?
Why was he hiding?
Why is he hiding? He's shy. Could be. Or is it possible this has been stage managed? Remember what Samuel said to Saul? Go and wait for me there, and I'll tell you what to do. Oh. This has to be seen to be a divine appointment. Now, how is it going to be demonstrated? Samuel will say, God chose him. No, not with this lot. No. It has to be seen. And so you've got the selection of the tribe, and the selection of the family, and the selection of the man, and where is he? And God speaks up and says, there he is behind the camel. So there'll be no doubt that this was divine selection. Because that's what the Torah says. Som tasim alecha melech, you shall appoint a king, asher yivcha adonai alecha bo, who God will choose. He's been chosen. Vayomer Shmuel kol ha'am, and Samuel said to all the people, Haritem asher bachar bo adonai, do you see whom the Lord has chosen? Same words. Not my choice. He's not my favorite. There's nobody like him among the entire nation of Israel. Look at him. And what's the reaction? Well, it's almost unanimous. And all the people shouted, and they said, long live the king. A proclamation of his kingship. So from anointing to proclamation. He was sacred before this happened, but the people had to acclaim him. But as you know, when it comes to leadership, especially among the Jewish community, not every leader is universally accepted. So look what comes next. Vayidaber Shmuel el ha'am et mishpat ha'melucha. And Samuel now tells the people of the manner of kingship, if you like, the constitution of kingship, the rights, the prerogatives of a king. Vayichtov ba'sefer, and he inscribed it upon a scroll. Vayanach lifnei Adonai, and he placed it before the Lord as a permanent record. So in future, if you will wish to consult the constitution, it's there. Vayishalach Shmuel kol ha'am ish lebeito, and now Samuel dismisses everybody, every man to his own home. I mean, there's no doubt who's in charge of all of this. Samuel may have appointed a king, but his position as the prophet, as the spokesman for God, is in no way diminished. Vagam Shaul halach lebeito givata, and Saul also goes back home to Gibeah. He hasn't got a royal capital, hasn't got a palace. Vayeluchim ha'chayu. And then went with him a troop of people, asher naga Elohim b'dibam, whose heart God had touched. They were now creating this embryonic court of the king. We are his supporters. Uvnei Belial amru, but there were godless people there who said, ma yoshienu zeh. How will this individual, this critter, save us? Vezuhu. And they despised him. V'lo heviu lo mincha. They would offer him no tribute to acknowledge his kingship. V'yehi kamacharish. And Saul said not a word. He cocked a deafen. He behaved like somebody who was deaf. Why? Any thoughts? Why doesn't he respond? The king? Two possibilities. Yeah?
He doesn't want to make trouble from the beginning.
I think that's the most plausible. He doesn't want to start his reign.
He hasn't got any divisions.
Well, that's the second point. He doesn't want to start his reign with recrimination. And he may not yet be in a position to say to somebody, go and chop their heads off. But please note that he shows constraint. Remember this, because we're going to be dealing with the story of Saul. And later on in his life, he's not going to be so constrained. He won't be so balanced. We have to accept something rather sad about Saul. He does have a fractured personality. He has a psychological instability, and this will manifest itself. And indeed, maybe that manifestation was already apparent when he's overtaken by the Spirit of God and behaves in this almost irrational way. Saul is a tragic figure. So where is he now? He's back at Gibeah. What's he doing? Sitting on his throne? Holding court? Forget it.
Eating mummy's chicken soup.
Well, that's only at the end of the day. What's he doing in the rest of the day? Have a look. Vayal Nachash Ammoni. Now Nachash the Ammonite went up. Vayichan al Yavesh Gilad. And he encamped against Jabesh Gilead. Vayomru kol anshe Yavesh Gilad el Nachash. And the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead said to Nachash, Kirot lanu brit. Make a covenant with us. Let's do a deal. V'na'av decham will serve you. Vayom aleihem Nachash. Nachash Ammoni said to them, Bezot echrot lachem. I'll make a covenant with you only on the following terms. Bin kol lachem kol ein yamin. That you blind every one of you his right eye. V'samti hacherpa al kol Yisrael. That I can set you as a reproach. A mark of shame to the whole nation of Israel. I'm cocking a snoot at the rest of Israel. Why blind their eye? Well, if there's any archers among them, they won't be archering anymore. But what's going on here? You see, anointing, proclaiming, and shouting is not enough. The people wanted their king to lead them out into battle. And so now the opportunity must present itself for Saul to justify his appointment. Can he do that job? But there's something else here too. It's not just a test of Saul. It's a test of Israel too. Do you remember our Ammonites? Not the first time we met the Ammonites. Remember the story of poor old Yiftach sitting there on the east bank? Mm-hmm. And he's got an Ammonite pain in the neck to deal with. And has to go up and fight with them. And what was the response of the big tribes on the West Bank? Didn't do a thing. Didn't lift a finger. Blow you lot, you're not our business. And when there was a victory, oh, then they come over, we're going to kill you. How dare you have a victory without us? I don't call that national unity. That's tribal disparity. And what about the little town of Jabesh Gilead? Bit of a shameful record, because when the tribes did go to war against Benjamin, because of their failure to act on the crimes. Who sits at home and says, don't bother me, it's nothing to do with me? The inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead. They will pay for it, of course. Now here, a situation is engineered by God. The Ammonites are showing their ugly faces above the parapet. Will the tribes of Israel behave like a nation and say, it may be happening on the East Bank, but this is our concern too? This little town there, with its poor record, is now under threat. Will they now behave like a nation and say, any section of our land, any component of our nation that is threatened, is the concern of us all? So it's a test of Saul's kingship, but it's a test for Israel too. And what happens? Vayomru elav zikne Yavesh Gilead. And so the people of Jabesh Gilead respond to this wonderful offer that Nachash has made to them. Heref lanu shivat yamim. Okay, give us 7 days respite. V'nishlecha malachim b'chol gvul Yisrael. So that we can send messengers throughout the entire territory of Israel to bring them to our support. V'imei moshia otanu. If nobody's prepared to save us, Yatzanu ilecha, then we'll come out to you and blind us. That seems rather strange. They're saying to this king, you know, give us a chance to bring an army and then we'll see whether we'll do it or not. And how does he respond? He lets them do it. Why does he let them do it? Because he's confident that there is no nation of Israel, there'll be no national response. The people of Jabesh Gilead can stew in their own juice. But Vayavo Hamalachim Givat Shaul, and the people come to Gibeah of Saul, and now you need your emetic green cake.
Is there another green one?
I don't have any more here. You have some more down there. Let's pass them on if there's a spare. If not, do try and share. Everyone okay? Vaydabru advarim be'ozneham, and they spoke these words in the ears of the people. Vayisu chol ha'amit kolam vayivku, and the entire gathered people there lifted up their voices and wept. Wept at the horror. And wept also at the threat. The Ammonites were a strong military force. V'nei Shaul ba me'acharei ha'bakar, and Saul came back from ploughing his field. What's he doing? He may be an anointed king, but there is no structure of kingship yet. There is no court, there is no retinue. So what's Saul doing? Doing his work. Only then he'll get his chicken soup. Vayomer Shaul, and Shaul said, Malam ki yivku, what's up with the people that they're weeping? Vayisapru lo et divrei anshe Yabeshki, and they told him the sad words of the people of Jabesh Gilead. Vatitzlach ruach Elohim al Shaul, and the spirit of God flashed through Saul, b'shom oet advarim ele, when he heard these things. Vayicha pa'u mod, and his anger burned within him greatly. He was furious. And look what he does for those who have strong stomachs. Vayikach tzemet bakar, and he took the pair of oxen that he'd been using for the plough. Vayinatchehu, he dissected them. Vayishalach b'chol gavul Yisrael, and sent them throughout the territory of Israel. B'yam malachim, through a messenger, Lemos, saying, Asheinenu yotzei acharei Shaul, anybody who doesn't follow Saul into battle now, Ko yeyase livkaro, that's what I'm going to do to your cattle. Made them an offer they couldn't refuse. Now, this is reminiscent, of course, of what the horrible Levite did to his poor old concubine. He dissects her. Saul's not that horrible. But why is he doing it?
He's got to raise an army.
Yeah, and he can't rely upon national spirit. He doesn't know if they will respond. So I'll give you a way of responding. Either you come, or your cattle will be mincemeat. A very convincing argument. And the fear of the Lord fell upon the people. And they came out like one man. Saul knows how to behave like a king. Yifkadim Bavazek, and he mustered them, numbered them in Bazek. Israel, and the children of Israel numbered 300,000, and the men of Judah 30,000. Now that worries me. Not the numbers. There'd always be someone to challenge the numbers. I thought Judah was part of Israel. So why are you saying Bnei Yisrael, the people of Israel, and Yehuda? Why this distinction?
Well, it wasn't then.
No, that's the whole point. There will be a division after the stupid son of Solomon will not make concessions to the tribes of Israel. And if you're familiar with the story of how Rehoboam, son of Solomon, brought up like a spoilt royal brat, will not lighten the taxation burden of his father, which was bled the people white. And so 10 of the northern tribes said to him, well, if you're not prepared to meet our demands, we are not prepared to serve you. And they broke away and formed the northern kingdom. So it is possible that the author of the book of Samuel was living at a time when this was already a reality. But it's equally possible that this division between Judah and the rest of Israel was already a reality then. Because when David becomes king, where does he rule?
Hebron.
First ruled in Judah, as a separate entity. Mm. So maybe. Vayomru la malachim abayim, and they said to the messengers that have come to them, Kol tomrum le'ishaveish Gilad, thus shall you say to the men of Jabesh Gilead, Machar, tomorrow iti yelachen teshua b'chom ha'shamesh, you will have salvation when the sun is at its hottest. Ve'yavo malachim, and the messengers came, ve'yagidu l'anshe Yavesh Gilead, and they have formed the people of Jabesh Gilead, v'yismachu, and they rejoiced. Ve'yomru anshe Yavesh Gilead, and at this point, the men of Jabesh Gilead then turn to Nahash, and they tell him, Machar, tomorrow, Netze Aleichem, will come out to you. Vasitem lanu kuchol atobi einechem, and you can do to us whatever you like. Now, why are they doing this?
So they won't expect to be fighting.
Precisely. They've got to put them off their guard. If they go out and say, you lot can get lost, oh, so the Ammonites will be ready for any army that comes to meet them. But if they go out and say to him, tomorrow we'll come out to you, then Nahash says, no, see, the spineless Israelites are not going to get together. And that's precisely what Saul wants. Vayimu mocharat, and so it happened on the next day. Vayasem Shaul et ha'am shlosha rashim. Saul divides the people into three groups, three divisions. Vayavo b'tocha machaneh. They came into the midst of the Ammonite camp, Ashmorat HaBoker, at first light, when they're still waking up and drowsy. Vayaku et Amon ad chom hayom. And they smoked the Ammonites until the midday. Vayanisharim. And that's for those who were left over after that slaughter. Vayafutsu, they scattered. Velo nisharu vam shnayim yachad. You couldn't find two Ammonites together. Total rout. Resounding victory for Saul, resounding achievement for the nation of Israel. But look what comes next. Vayomer ha'am el Shmuel. And now the people turn to Samuel, not to Saul, but to Samuel. Mi ha'omer Shaul yimloch aleinu? Anyone who had said, why should Saul reign over us? Tunu anashim, give us those men and meet them, or we're going to put them to death. Saul has justified himself.
Yeah.
These people are now shown to have been totally, totally erroneous. And when you make that kind of mistake, you pay for it with your life. Tudors did it on a regular basis. And what does Samuel say? Well, Samuel says nothing. Maybe Samuel would have given them over. By Yomer Shaul, Saul says, Lo yumatish by Yomazeh, no man should be put to death this day. Ki ha-yom asa Adonai teshuah b'Yisrael, because this day God has done salvation for Israel. This is not a day to shed Israelite blood. So who's now taking charge? The people turned to Samuel because they used to turn it to Samuel. But there's a king now, and he says, no, you're not doing it. Why not? You know, this is going to contrast very strongly with Saul in his later life, where he'll butcher a whole town. But now, no.
This wasn't his doing, but it was divine intervention.
Yes, this is obviously, may Hashem, it's of the Lord. But I also think that Saul does not want to initiate his reign with an Israelite bloodbath, because that will leave a bad taste in people's mouths for all time. He wants to show clemency. When you have the authority of a king, you show it by exercising discretion and clemency. And so Saul takes his stand, not today. So what happens next? Vayomer Shmuel el kol ha'am, Samuel then says to the people, Luchu, come on, v'nelecha Gilgal, let's go to Gilgal. Unchadeshama melucha, let us renew the kingship there. Well, what do you mean, renew the king? He's barely been in the job a few weeks, you want to renew it already? Oh, good reason. because when he was first proclaimed king, not everybody accepted him. Now there is a unanimous acceptance of Saul, and so Samuel says, come to Gilgal and we will renew it. Now everybody is behind him. Vayiluchu kol ha'am Gilgal, and all the people go to Gilgal. Appropriate place. This is where Joshua had made the covenant with God through circumcision. Now they will make their covenant with God through their king. Vayamlichu sham et Shaul lifnei Adonai ba'Gilgal, and they proclaimed Saul king there at Gilgal before the Lord. Vayizbuchu sham levachim shlamim, they offered up peace offerings before the Lord, if now do nigh. By Yismach Sham Shaul, and Saul rejoiced there, V'chal Amche Yisrael, and the people of Israel, Ad Me'od. Saul and his people are at the climax of their happiness. Regrettably, from this point on, we're going into a decline. We're now on the last chapter 12 is where we've just reached. But please remember, one man hasn't really had his say. Samuel. He has been unceremoniously handed his gold watch and told to push off. And all he said was, you know, you've rebelled against the Lord, you've rejected God. But Samuel has a right to feel peeved. And we'll see why. Vayomer Shmuel kol Yisrael. Samuel now says to all of Israel, they're rejoicing, ecstatic. Hine shamati b'kolachem. I listen to you. Chol asher amartem li, in all that you said to me. V'amlich alechem melech. I've set a king over you. V'ata, and now hine hamelech mitalech lifneichem, your king goes before you. V'ani, and as for me, zakanti, I'm old, v'safti, I'm aged. U'v'anai hinam minachem, my sons were with you. You didn't want them. Good reason. V'ani hithalachti lifneichem, and I have walked before you, I have conducted my affairs before you, mini'urai, since I was a child, aliyom hazeh, to this day. I've devoted my entire life to you. And what has been your response? You're old, we don't want you anymore. So let's sort one or two things out. Do you have any complaints against me? Hinami anuwi. Here am I. Bear witness against me, neged Adonai, before the Lord. V'neged Mashiach, in the presence of his anointed one. Et shomi lakachti. Whose ox did I ever take? V'chamor mi lakachti, whose donkey did I ever take? V'et mi ashakti, whom did I ever oppress? Et mi ratzoti, whom did I ever persecute? Miyad mi lakachti kofer, from whom did I ever take a bribe? V'alim einai bo, so that I could turn a blind eye to what he was up to. Come on, tell me, v'ashiv lachem, and I'll answer up for myself. Have you got rid of me because I was unworthy? Do you have any complaints against me? My integrity? He wants that for the record. He doesn't want posterity to think that he was moved on one side because of his personal failings. No way. Vayomru, and they had to answer him, Lo ashaktanu, you never oppressed us, Lo ratzotanu, you never harried us, Lo lakachta miyad ishmuma, you've never taken a penny from anybody. Vayome aleihem, and he said to them, Eid Adonai b'achem, the Lord is a witness against you this day, for Eid Mashicho hayom hazeh, and his anointed is a witness this day, Ki lo matzatem biyadei meuma, that you have found nothing against me. Vayome, and the people answered as one man, Eid, let God be witness. Powerful. He wants it on record that I have said, maybe my sons have let me down. but you have no complaint against me. And it is terribly, terribly sad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is the truth. I said to you, remember we started, we're dealing with three tragic figures.
In his old age, they let him down.
Yeah. Samuel, Saul, David. But it's not just in his old age, taken away from his mummy at the age of two, brought up in the invidious environment of the sanctuary at Shiloh with a pair of mafiosi, Pinchas and Hophni. His first mission, the very first time God speaks to him, he says, go and tell Eli he's had it. And from there on, he has to assume the responsibility of a prophet of Israel. No easy task. Leading the Jewish people may be a great privilege, but it is not an easy one to bear. And now, after a lifetime of bearing it, he has unceremoniously been shunted on one side. And therefore, he's going to have his say. I don't want the gold watch. Just let me have my say.
Did Moses say something similar?
No. With Moses, you have an interesting point there. The Torah gives us two accounts of the replacement of Moses. In the book of Bamidbar, it's Moses who goes to God and he says, Lord God of the spirits of all flesh, don't let this people go leaderless. I know I'm old, so appoint someone to take my place. Very dignified. But in the book of Deuteronomy, which is Moses' personal account of things, he said, boy, did I put on a performance. I appealed and I beseeched, let me go in. Until God said to him, Ravlach, which can be interpreted in one of several ways. First of all, shut up. Secondly, Ravlach, you had enough. Shift over, let the next guy have a turn. So there is Moses protesting, but not to the people, to God. Because in the case of Moses, it wasn't the people who at this time, there'd been enough attempts to depose him in the past. But in the case of Moses, it was God who said, this is it, enough. Tragic figure. Tragic figure. Ripped away from his parents when he's still a babe in arms. Brought up in the court of the Pharaoh, and no doubt formed great attachments to the people there. I cannot imagine he didn't have an attachment to the Egyptian people. Can't grow up as a prince of Egypt and not like something about them. And then the tragedy of discovering who he really is, having to flee 40 years in absentia, and then to return with one task. To smash up the nation, the palace, the country which had reared him and given him his status. And all that for a people who did not cease to moan from the moment they set outside the land of Israel until they were outside the land of Egypt, until they came into the land of Israel. And he has to put up with them. And at the end of it all, he doesn't even get the privilege of going into the land to see what it was like. The rabbis put it very beautifully. They said it's like the agent of a king who went to choose a bride for the son of the king. And he comes back with the report of the bride, which he gives in detail. Yet when it comes to the wedding, the king says, you are not invited.
Oh.
You are not invited. No. Who was it who said to the people, the land is beautiful, it's wonderful, God is looking after us? And when it came to the ultimate consummation of going into the land, Moses is told, not you. So we do have a tradition of tragic leadership. And Samuel is a manifestation of it. But we're not quite finished with what Samuel has to say. Are there any other questions? Because the rest of the text, if I can, I want to save for our last session next week. We are covering a lot of ground, you're aware of that.
Yes.
But I do so in this manner because I want you to feel the story. I could stop, I could discuss a lot more by way of the language. But my objective is to make you aware of the powerful biblical story. You could read the story for yourself, as I said at the beginning of our studies, but look how the biblical storyteller does his job. Can you picture Samuel? Can you see Saul? Can you close your eyes and witness the scene of them standing around and proclaiming king? That's the power of the written and spoken word. Okay, we meet next week. It'll be end of term. Yeah, please, by all means.
I'm keeping the Yom Kippur war in mind.
Yeah.
Keeping in mind the fact that Israel is always surrounded by hostile nations.
Yes.
On the Soviet perspective, it says nation men may not be Jerusalem. Who's guarding the border?
That's a very fair question. If I can keep my text separate, I will. There were always those who were a bit left behind. You know, although we're called Zukurcha, yes, the entire nation was supposed to go. You were supposed to have trust in God that He would look after you, most certainly. But in reality, we know that not everybody could go up. There were those who were unwell, there were those who had their things to do, had their responsibilities. And in the days of the Second Temple, provision was made for this. But initially, you had to trust God. The real question is, how many of them actually went up on that pilgrimage during the days of the First Temple? And I think the answer would be, you didn't have to build too many additional hotels in Jerusalem. Because please remember that the people were much better at defection than devotion.
But would the defectors fight?
Would the defectors fight? Yes, to defend themselves? I'm certain they would fight. And lose. Remember that. Please bear in mind that salient fact that there may be a lot of secular Jews in Israel, but they're prepared to go out and fight and die for the country, and for that you have got to respect them.
Mm-hmm. I have one. You're
not the ones here.
Pardon?
Not the ones who sign the
times
here.
Oh, I see. Well, you know, we have often been very, very good at producing our own internal detractors. We don't really need external enemies, we do a very good job for ourselves.
I'm wondering how many of them actually were Jewish, really. Down that list. I mean...
I don't know. I should think that they are, but they...
They'd be Jewish if there were another Hitler.
I think that the burden of Jewish history, these last 2,000 years of ongoing persecution, 2,000 years of being told that we are in reality a perfidious people, that we are in reality cast off by God, that we belong to the dustbin of history, has bred a certain psychological reaction in some Jews, a tendency to deface themselves, to debase themselves, and a yearning to look good in the eyes of their neighbours, and I want you to accept me as a fully integrated member of your society, not facing up to the reality that it won't happen. Because all our protestations will not overcome prejudice. And we're living in a prejudice that has been carefully constructed for the last 1900 years of Christianity. But there are those who think, well, if I come out and attack Israel and side with all the detractors, you'll see what a good Jew I am or how Jews can be. The response to that is very simple. Where was the world when they were marching our people into the gas chambers? And where would the world be, if, God forbid, Iran unleashed its atomic bombs on Israel. They'll be where they always were, standing back, holding the tail, holding the towel and a bucket, waiting to clear up the mess after it's finished. So our response to that is, you needn't bother. We'll take care of our own mess in our own way. Do we have a choice?
I have one very big problem. Maybe it's too long for you to answer.
Yeah.
And that is that in what we're reading, whoever speaks to Hashem gets an immediate response.
Yes.
You know, you ask the question and hooray, in 10
yes.
minutes the answers come down.
Right.
I don't find my life is like that.
That's typical point, Stan.
Yeah, maybe the Almighty is dodging your question. Maybe the Almighty is dodging your question. No, but your point is a valid one. We don't really have time to explore it now.
I thought but there is something you might address, because it basically hinges on belief and what do you believe in.
And the real issue, of course, the real issue is, Is the age of God communicating with man over?
Yes.
That's the point.
Yeah.
Is the age of God communicating with man over? That is a very, very big issue.
Or is it that we don't know how to?
Or is it possible that the voice that spoke at Sinai is still reverberating up there in the firmament, but we have lost the capacity to hear it?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
It's more like it.
You know, is it possible?
Yeah.
Our ears have become deafened to the voice of God. But there are some people that still hear it.
Some people
who still hear it. There are some inspired people. Not necessarily only Jews. I think who still hear it.
39.
Well, you've got the 39, you've got the 39, the 36 just men. But I go beyond that. To me, a man like Churchill, for all his faults, to have stood up against in a time when everybody condemned any suggestion of war and branded him as a troublemaker, to have stood up repeatedly and to have taken all the calumny and all the disgrace, and eventually to stand up to Hitler and put a backbone into a nation and inspire them. If that wasn't the hand of God, I don't know what is. What was that? An aberration of history? I don't think so.
Your interpretation, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Well, at the end of the day, you see, kind of like, we all interpret things through our own eyes. And God sits up there with a smile on his face.
That's your interpretation.
That's my interpretation.